Hey, this is Dave with Screen Geeks Radio. I'm here with Beetle Queen Conquers Tokyo director Jessica Ulrich. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's hard to figure out where to start with this. There's so much to talk about with this film, and I liked it. It was such a good movie. It was shot beautifully.
Thank you.
Where did you come up with the title for this? Because the film's about Japan's fascination with bugs.
Yes. The title actually was sort of a mistake. We have this friend who's sort of a failed poet, this older gentleman that we often coffee with in New York, and when he found out that my boyfriend and I, who my boyfriend shot the film, when he found out that we were going to Japan, he said, so it's like Beetle Queen Conquers Tokyo. And we were both like, oh, that's actually pretty cool. I think we're just, we used it for a trailer really early on and everyone just loved it. So we just stuck with it.
Very cool. Because it set you almost for a monster movie, which in some ways is appropriate.
It's very ironic. I mean, we've definitely gotten reviews where people went in expecting a Godzilla movie. And we get those reviews where they're like, this was a boring movie about Japanese history, and I thought it was going to be a monster film. So it has its downside for sure.
Fair enough. I found it absolutely fascinating. What made you want to do a documentary about this?
Well, I've loved bugs since I was really little. So it was when I found out that Japanese people loved bugs as much as I did, it felt like I was meant to make this film. I mean, I went to school for biology and film production, and I wanted to make movies about bugs, but I didn't want to make science movies about bugs. So
fair enough.
When I started this project, I realized my path, sort of, that what I'm interested in is ethnobiology, the way that cultures interact with the natural world, not individuals, but whole social masses. And so that was... Yeah, so everything sort of just fell into place for it, and it was enlightening for me. And I mean, research is one of my favorite things. So I did a ton of research for this film, and it was fascinating, and I'm so glad I made it.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It's fascinating, like especially as a fan of like old Kurosawa films and stuff. It totally explained the dragonflies being on their garb and such, and
yeah.
It was so cool to get that kind of perspective. Now, something that's very interesting that surprised me, obviously you're not of Asian descent.
No.
But the film is completely in Japanese.
It is.
Almost completely. What made you make that choice?
There were several things. I mean, I had originally, Haruko Shinazaki, who read the voiceover for me, originally we had recorded the voiceover in English, her reading it as well with a Japanese accent. And it just didn't flow. I mean, there's something about watching a movie in its original language that just... it's a different feeling altogether, and I really wanted that feeling. And so that was one reason why the English didn't work for me. But another reason was watching the film with the English version, it felt very flat to me. And what I love about films is that you can watch them a million times and see something different each time. I mean, what I love about good films,
absolutely.
Say.
Fair enough.
And so what I really wanted was to have people... watch the film the first time and only pay attention to the visuals and just give up on reading the subtitles. And then the second time through, they watch it and they read the subtitles and they get something totally different from the film. So that was my intention, actually, was that I wanted people to be able to pay attention to whatever they wanted to pay attention to, depending on their mood.
Absolutely.
Or their skill at reading.
One thing I appreciated was that not everything is subtitled in the film. Some parts you just leave to, the scene speaks for itself. And sometimes I don't need to read what's going on. It took me a little while to get used to it, but I love that fact. You just kind of let the scenes develop organically. And
yeah.
Was that on purpose, too?
Yeah. I mean, I love watching movies without subtitles because you see things, you start watching people's faces differently. And I mean, it's different with a narrative film because obviously it's much more constructed and perfected. But, watching the footage, I didn't know what they were saying either. I don't speak Japanese, and I didn't need the translation. So I was like, I don't think. I mean, then it turns out, I would have it translated, and they were usually saying stupid things, So I just left it without them, the subtitles.
It almost works like the Red Balloon does. I'm sure you've seen.
I haven't.
Have you heard of it?
I mean, I read the book.
Fair enough.
I quote-unquote read the book when I was little.
It reminds me a lot of that in that you don't have to... The film plays without any kind of subtitles, and it just really had that universal quality I think you really brought with those scenes.
Oh, thank you.
Which was great. Yeah.
Universal, I like that.
Yeah, it worked well, yeah. I'm very curious about distribution-wise with this. Where do you go with this film? This is a very unique film that not everyone's going to appreciate.
Yeah, it's I don't want to say it's tough, because I think that people can enjoy it. They just have to learn what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a lot of people go into a documentary and they expect a main character and they expect a formal narrative arc. And my film has neither of those things. And but I think that a lot of people can enjoy it. They just have to sort of drop their preconceived notions of what this movie is going to be about. But it's great. Actually, we've just signed with Argo Pictures.
Very cool.
And they're a theatrical distributor. So we're going to be opening in New York in May. And then we're playing a few other places. And, you know, it's a very limited theatrical release.
But, absolutely.
Our goal is to do a little bit of theatrical, and then we really, I keep saying we, but technically it's just me. I really want to do educational tour, do museums and libraries and universities. We have a short version that we want to show in schools, and I feel like we have a lot of opportunity to make it into events. I mean, I feel like we could bring in anyone from a bonsai expert to a Buddhist monk to an entomologist. I mean, there are so many people that could be involved in the sort of in a panel afterwards, you know, just creating discussions, you know, around whatever parts of the film interest people.
Very cool. One thing that's very striking is the cinematography in this film. It's just so gorgeous. Like, it's very vibrant, and I just saw it on DVD. I can imagine what it's like, you know, where did that come from? Like, I mean, getting someone to hold something that still on that tight of a shot, that was a minor miracle by itself, I think.
Well, I luckily date a really great cinematographer.
That never hurts.
Yeah, my boyfriend, his name's Sean Price Williams. He is a really fantastic cinematographer. And it was, obviously, I was going to use him because it meant I saved on hotel rooms. And then I saved, you know, it was a lot cheaper to use him. But he also, he just brings he brings his own aesthetic. I mean, it's not the way that many people would shoot that film. And he has this really amazing ability to shoot stuff where it's like these very abstract images that fall into clarity, and they mm-hmm. juxtapose really fantastically. I mean, some of the shots of masses of people set against, you know, insects, and lights, the way he shoots darkness and light. He just has a really special way about it. And we fought a lot while shooting. You know, I'd be like, John, just get this shot over here. He'd be like, I'm not going to get that shot. It's a really bad shot. And I'd be like, no, I'm going to use it. I'm talking about this when I'm going to shoot it. This is, I need this. And he'd get it. And he'd be like, you're not going to use it. And I'd say, no, I'm going to use it. And then he'd go off on his own and shoot something else. And he'd be like, this is what you're going to use for that scene. I'd be like, no, you don't even know what the scene's about. What are you talking about? But inevitably, I used what he shot. I mean, he really has an eye for atmosphere. And it's very good.
Very cool. Another thing that's very striking is it's almost a very intimate look into Japanese culture. Was it hard getting people to talk about this, or?
Yes and no. I mean, people are always really excited to talk about bugs in Japan. It's a really easy okay. topic. You know, it's not like you're talking, like, I mean, if you saw The Cove, it's not like you're asking people about dolphin slaughter. You're asking about something that they love and that they're really good at. So it wasn't so hard. I mean, it's hard because the Japanese culturally are so different from ourselves.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're much more quiet, and they just, you know, their expressions they're just very different than Americans. Probably couldn't get more different. So that part was difficult, but we were with a native Japanese speaker the whole time who grew up in Tokyo. So she, you know, I think she sort of set people at ease a lot. And yeah, and the people that we found were just really excited to be part of it. So
very cool. You said that you're kind of out to set out to change the way documentaries are looked at a little bit. Who were some of your influences growing up or in your development?
I mean, I love the early '90s Harun Faraki films. I love one of my favorite films, maybe potentially my favorite film, is Tokyo Olympiad by Konichi Kawa.
Oh yes,
That movie just blows my mind. I could watch it endlessly. So those, and, you know, I love, who else? There's so many amazing documentary films out there that I feel like are, you know, very underappreciated. But, you know, I love, Furu Furukazad did a movie called The House is Black, which is just like this 10-minute film about a leper colony. Not
okay.
leprechauns, but a leper colony. And I don't know, the editing and the sound design, it just, there are a lot of films that I watched that influenced me. But while I was editing, my the only thing I was watching was Anthony Mann Westerns. I don't know why.
That was okay.
That was what I was watching when I was editing. But I did really, you know, I've watched a lot of documentaries. I come from a history of video stores and video store clerks. So that was, that helped, I think.
Very cool.
Having a history of that.
It never hurts at all. Is there any kind of play? I could totally see this playing like on Discovery or something like that. Is there any kind of moving towards that at all? Or?
Well, we have a short version that we cut for TV. Since it's just me, mm-hmm. I don't have any connections in the TV world.
Fair
so
enough.
I'm sort of just hoping that someone out of the blue is going to come in and be like, this movie should be on TV. Let me help you. So I am looking for someone to help me with TV stuff. But
okay.
That's in the future because we have to wait for theatrical anyway. So
Fair enough. Now, where can we find out more information about the film, its release, and all that fun stuff?
Beetlequeen.com. BETLEQUEEN.com.
Cool. Any Twitter or Facebook or anything like that, really? Or?
My friend has set up a Facebook page for Beetle Queen, but I don't know how often it's updated. I'm not part of that yet.
That's okay.
I spend too much time reading, I guess. I don't know. Too
There's
much time
nothing
geek,
wrong with that.
Geeking out with bugs. But yeah, hopefully someday I'll get into that. But right now it's just the website.
Okay, that's totally cool. So the film's going to be releasing theatrically in New York in May.
Yes.
The film is Beetle Queen Conquers Tokyo. Jessica Orrick, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.